In October of 2018, Mayo Clinic announced it had completed its go-live for something called the Plumber Project. The project spanned 90 hospitals, took 3 years to complete, and supposedly cost over $1.5 billion. What was this project? It was an initiative to get a single EHR system up and running across Mayo's three campuses in Minnesota, Arizona, and Florida. The aim was to provide better care by creating one integrated system that streamlined the handling of clinical data and billing information. Welcome to the series of IQVIA podcasts about organized health systems. Thanks for listening. I'm Rory Martin, head of IQVIA's Center of Excellence for Integrated Delivery Networks. This week, we're discussing electronic health record systems, or EHRs as they're known, and how they can affect treatment. My guest this week is Lisa Blanton from IQVIA's Integrated Capabilities team and subject matter expert on EHRs. Welcome, Lisa.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So Lisa, the way I think of an EHR system is it's just a big database on patients which captures a history of all the different tests and diagnoses and procedures and drugs received and the providers who deliver them. Why is this something health systems like Mayo would be prepared to spend billions of dollars on? Why does it matter so much?
Well, there's a number of key benefits that these facilities gain from these systems. Some of the biggest names that provide systems are Epic, Cerner, Allscripts. You might be able to recognize some of those names. The benefits are they improve aggregation and communication of information. They can identify patients who are due for preventative visits and screening. They can help with the patient outreach. They can monitor how patients measure up to certain treatments. And they can support evidence decision-making, automating and streamlining the provider workflows, helping them to gather outcomes. The functionality that they use is what you see when you go to the doctor's office. They type in the clinical documentation, and then they use the same order system to put in your prescriptions and to put in the notes for your next tests or your next treatments. These clinical decision support systems gather all of those pieces of information, the factoids, into a more usable system of information for the doctor the next time you come back. And it also has started to allow them to build a patient portal, which lets them interact with you as the patient a lot more efficiently.
I just read an article about the state of the EHR industry called Why EHR Data Interoperability is Such a Mess. It appeared in Healthcare IT News. The picture painted seemed quite bleak. I'm assuming that this is a chicken that's come home to roost for US healthcare, that the lack of central planning and the lack of government involvement has meant these health systems have grown organically. And as they get bigger through mergers and acquisitions, you end up with these different pieces being thrust together. What's actually going on? Why is there a problem?
Well, you've hit on a point about US healthcare. It isn't a system. It's never been a system, and it was never intended to be a system. It's actually groupings of different pieces of an industry that are, in fact, competitive in most cases. So the first thing to remember about electronic health records is that they're a great idea to pull together information in a disparate, non-systemic industry where patients have a great need to be tracked and understood. Electronic health records are also known by the acronym EHR or EMR, electronic medical records. Those are used interchangeably. They track a patient's healthcare longitudinally or over time, and it provides important information, evidence for decisions about medically appropriate and cost-effective healthcare. All of us have run around to different types of doctors, specialists, and many of us have experienced a situation where our symptoms haven't led to a direct diagnosis. And so we really go to a number of different physicians trying to get answers. When none of the providers can talk to each other, None of them know what the other one is doing, and patients are often left trying to make important medical decisions based on medical advice from these multiple physicians. It may not solve the problem, and the confusion and unnecessary duplication of testing and expenses can cause additional problems. What we're looking for is the ability of the systems to talk to each other. When we have hospitals and IDN systems using such a large amount of clinical information, we really need this information to make sense. So the systems are built for information to be intelligently used. So why is it so hard for them to interact? We go back to the original point. These are competitive environments, and the systems that they purchase in the hospitals are often competing. So an IDN in a hospital, which is a complex grouping of departments, often have budgets that are siloed department by department. And each department looks at different systems and wants different usability features. It's not really dissimilar from Samsung versus Apple. You get certain features on an Apple that you can't get on an Android. And the two systems are competing, so they don't talk to each other, and they don't make it easier for you to use them interchangeably. So people get locked into one system, and that's what we see happening here. The average hospital manages 10 EHR vendors. That's a little surprising. The average health system, including affiliated providers, which is multiple hospitals, has 18 EHR vendors. Inpatient and outpatient systems often differ. Specialty EHRs are different in the core systems, and all of this presents big challenges for interoperability.
You mentioned order sets and product guidelines. How does clinical information like this find its way into EHR systems?
Clinical guidelines are downloaded from third-party companies most often. These third-party companies, like First Data Bank, Complete Healthcare Solutions, Medispan, and others, collect these guidelines from professional and advocacy groups. These professional and advocacy groups, examples being U.S. Preventative Services Task Force, which is government-sponsored, or National Comprehensive Cancer Network, better known as NCCN, which is private, are working diligently to develop guidelines across many therapeutic areas. These guidelines are made available or published, and companies like First Data Bank and Medispan collect these guidelines. These companies may also tweak some guidelines or add some of their own limited guidelines. This is a growing area. Once the guidelines are downloaded into the facilities, they may be used as is. The clinical committees within the facility may also decide to modify them, either to use specific products or to follow an internal facility protocol. The material in the guidelines that comes from the download may not be used word for word. There are a lot of people involved in deciding clinical guidelines, and they represent a number of departments within the health system. Departments include medical review, pharmacy committees, heads of specific departments like infectious disease or oncology, and also other types of departments within the facility like compliance and quality control. Even when two products or procedures that are considered therapeutically interchangeable are entered into the system for download, the information on each one may be entered differently, leading to different prescribing decisions. In other words, even a product that should be used the same way may have information that when read by the prescribers is considered differently in their prescribing protocol, even if there isn't a clinical reason for it. These discrepancies are sometimes purposeful to reflect a preference for one treatment over another, but sometimes the inputs have been entered by multiple parties, and the differences that drive treatment behaviors happen without any purpose, and it's unintentional or inadvertent, and the IDN or hospital is not even aware of the influence.
So can this impact treatment?
Yes, quite a bit. Any difference in a required order entry process to prescribe a product or even a treatment can create a disincentive within the system, a barrier within the system for the provider to either write the product or prescribe the procedure. And it falls into an affected class. So there may be an intent from a provider to use a certain product, but when he goes to write that product in the system, there is an action barrier. And that action barrier within the process affects what he chooses. And he gets pushed to something else in the class. Products may take greater number of clicks to order. Even one click can impact a decision when a provider is hurrying to discharge a patient. These differences, again, may not be purposeful. Information may be entered in at different times, and the people entering it may not notice that there's an inadvertent connection to another similar product in the class. Another thing that can happen is the EHR product guidelines are out of date. Not all facilities and IDNs download information from the third-party payers at the same calendar timeline. And if there are any updates in between the downloads, some of the information in the system could be out of date. There could be new dosing guidelines. There could be new package insert indications or other changes to the PI. And this EHR information may not capture those changes. And this could confuse both starter and maintenance regimens. Another place where we see some issues within the protocols or processes within the EHR is a transition of care issue. When a patient goes from one department to another department in a system, there may not be a communication. If a patient is discharged from the emergency room and is admitted into the hospital, those two departments may use different systems, and it may take a while for that information to get downloaded. The admitting physician on the floor may use a completely different protocol. So there could be a lack of continuity even within a few hundred feet in the same building. The discharging physician may not be aware of the issue, and so there could be differences at a pharmacy or differences within a floor use. And the patient doesn't always understand the importance of the differences between the products. They may accept the substitution and not even be able to tell the new physician what the issue is. So there could be prescribing problems even within the same patient journey within the same hospital admission.
What I'm hearing is that when problems exist with guidelines in EHR systems, it can decrease the usage of the product or the drug class involved. And this is interesting because earlier in this podcast series, we saw that we could see this effect by comparing the treatment behavior of IDN-affiliated physicians to that of unaffiliated providers. If there's a negative influence due to this kind of EHR issue, the affiliated HCPs who are using the EHR system with the issue will be writing less of that particular product or class. And so by looking for this depressed share, we can shortlist health systems where we suspect that there's a problem. You've described situations in which clinical information in an EHR system may not be captured in the best possible way. What can we do about that?
Well, I think there's two basic categories of solutions. The first group of solutions is proactive. Prevent errors by understanding EHR processes, understanding the guidelines before the issues ever can arise. The second category is reactive. Fix problems after they occur. The data that you've just described can help us understand when there is a problem that's already occurring. If physicians are prescribing behavior outside of the system and then they are changing prescribing behavior within the system, it's an indication that there could be a barrier inside of that EHR system. And we can go in and look and see what those barriers could be and potentially fix problems in dosing accuracy or other differences that are inadvertent or even erroneous within the healthcare information system. The proactive key is to take great care in launch plans to manage the understanding of the accurate clinical information. It's an educational process. Understanding why errors can occur is critical. Where do the errors first appear? How can we get in front of the problem? The key to reactive solution is to be able to diagnose the problems when they exist and be able to fix them. This takes a unique combination of skills. We have people who are trained in how the electronic health systems work, and they speak this technical language. And there are also people who can help to diagnose, educate, and advise on system configurations to optimize care. We offer this service, and we created a staff of experts called Health Information Technology Specialists. They are certified in the EHR system or systems, and they understand the IT part of the electronic management world. But these experts are also clinically trained. They're often nurses or pharmacists, or they have some other advanced training in medical arenas, so they can understand the total environment. Our HIT specialists provide guidance to find errors in the EHR documents. They support patients' clinical outcomes. They educate systems on potential issues that can bring a safety risk, such as changes to the PI or indications, or the aforementioned dosing. And they advise on ways to streamline ordering within the system. They can also help enter any kind of information into the EHR system accurately and review the third-party download information before a product is ever launched.
Do you have any examples describing how this actually works in practice?
Yes. IQVIA had a client that had a cardiovascular product that had already been included in the electronic health record system and order sets in a way that made it difficult and confusing for the product to be prescribed. The product, although it was therapeutically interchangeable with a number of other products in the market, lacked EHR parity with its class competitors. Dosing was entered incorrectly across the indications, and the workflow for the prescribing of order sets was inefficient, leading to physicians complaining that they were unable to get the product. IQVIA started a pilot project to assess the ability to diagnose these kinds of issues in the different facilities that were being affected. And they communicated the findings with the clinical decision makers and the institutional-based IT directors. They worked with the client's local teams to direct these EHR issues, working within the political hierarchy in each facility. Over 80 accounts were reached in year one. In the first 6 months, the HIT specialists corrected errors in a significant number of accounts. They aligned the parity issues, they corrected the dosing errors, and they helped to streamline the clinical prescribing process. These fixes supported efficient access for the providers to prescribe their chosen medically necessary treatment, and many patients were able to receive treatment that were previously unable to receive it. The project is currently being expanded.
Well, that completes our episode on EHR systems. In today's program, we heard about the diversity of EHR systems and some of the interoperability challenges it creates. We learned how treatment guidelines get into EHR systems, and we were told some of the things that can go wrong in the process and solutions for how to address this. Lisa Blanton, thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
If you're interested in joining us next time, we'll be learning about primary market research and how it's used to uncover some of the why behind IDN behavior. I'm your host, Rory Martin. Bye for now.